Totally Football Show Continental Edition. Looking ahead to a big week in the Champions League and back on all the weekend news with Chris Smalling larging it in Rome. The really hitting the fans in Berlin, and PSG like it like that as Icardi becomes the main man in Paris. It's all coming up in the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Hello, listener. Welcome back to another Continental edition of Your Totally Football Show. On board, it's a classic lineup. James Horncastle.
Hi, James.
Alvaro Romeo.
Hello.
Julien Laurent.
Bonjour.
And Raphael Honigstein.
Hi.
Boom. Hey. We're excited. Champions League fixtures and some crazy results and big stories around the continent. Around them as well. All right, what headline are you going to throw our way just to tease our interest in the Bundesliga this week, Rafa?
Well, the big story, James, is Dortmund very nearly losing against the worst team in the league, Paderborn. They were 3-0 down, scored the equaliser in the last minute, but still it felt like a defeat, and it felt like the beginning of the end for Lucien Favre.
Oh, I thought we'd had that some months ago. But anyway, we'll hear
still,
more.
Still beginning.
All right, the end of the beginning of the end, perhaps. Okay, Julien, what's hot in France?
Mauro Icardi scored again for PSG in a very similar fashion to what he does. One touch finish in the 6-yard box. PSG won again and feel ready with Neymar coming back for the clash against Real Madrid on Tuesday night.
Is one touch finish the sort of thing that Conte advised for?
Well, this was going to be my headline. I was hoping you were going to ask me what's hot in Serie A. It's Conte's Kama Sutra.
Yeah.
And this is one of the reasons why he eventually got rid of Icardi. Because remember those photos where he was on top of Wanda.
Yeah. Right.
Clearly not the advice that Conte has been giving his players.
Well, you know, funnily enough, Inter are underneath the old lady in the Serie A standings at the moment, so that works perfectly. This is one of the most unexpected stories of the week, but we'll come on to it, as you say. Antonio Conte's...
I suppose you could put it like that.
Antonio Conte's, sexual advice column in Esquire or GQ?
No, L'Equipe.
Oh, L'Equipe.
It has to be French. It had to be French.
Was it not anyway. Le Coq Sportif?
All right. Anyway, that and more to come. And also, Alvaro, what have you got for us news-wise?
No parental advisory needed here. It's just Gareth Bale getting the reception that we expected him to have at Santiago Bernabeu. And then Kylian Mbappé and Neymar, two long-time dreams of Real Madrid, are coming back to Santiago Bernabeu for the Champions League game against Real Madrid. So I really want to see if Kylian Mbappé is up to the challenge there. And one word about Barcelona. They have scored 6 of the last 7 goals in the league out of a set-piece routine, which is something that is less Barcelona-like routine you can find.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
We've got a complete programme of Champions League fixtures coming up midweek. Let's begin by picking out some of the key matches. And you mentioned it there, Paris Saint-Germain, to give them their full name, going to Madrid, or to give them their full name, Wales Golf Madrid, to take on Gareth Bale and the boys. Gareth Bale receiving, I think it was 87 decibels of boos and whistles from the Bernabeu crowd, but performing in the 20 minutes he got.
Yeah, because that's the story of his career at Real Madrid. I mean, every time he features and... it doesn't happen that often. He performs and he delivers. But I cannot recall any Real Madrid player being received like this. I remember that the likes of Martin Vázquez at the time, the likes of Butragueño at some point, maybe they got a little bit of a stick because they weren't performing at the end of the Quinta del Buitre time. But what Gareth Bale got the other day was something unseen in Santiago Bernabéu for a very long time.
Really?
Not even Isco last season, because what happened with Isco was they were booing his performances. But with Gareth Bale, there is a mixture of things that are there in the cocktail maker. And he managed to play at the end a good game. And as I said in the previous Totally Football Show, Zinedine Zidane wants to be pragmatic with Gareth Bale. He wanted him out. He said that in summer, that sell to China didn't happen. And now he's going to use him as a very, you know, useful tool because he's a tremendous winger for Real Madrid. Real Madrid won the game, and probably the most interesting thing in there it was to see how Karim Benzema has stepped up at the age of 32 years old to become the Pichichi of La Liga. He has scored already 10 goals, and if Karim Benzema was accused of anything, it was his inability to score many goals. And this season he's silencing all his critics.
He was the cat that Mourinho didn't want to go hunting with.
Yes, Jose Mourinho, actually he brought Emmanuel Adebayor to Real Madrid when he got Gonzalo Higuain and Karim Benzema in the squad because he wanted the striker of that physical presence, you know what I mean? And I think that the good thing about Real Madrid now, going back to the game against Real Sociedad, is that they played against a good team. They started losing 1-0 because Sergio Ramos did a tremendous mistake and William José took advantage of that. And still Real Madrid managed to come back, showing that they have a very fresh football, fresh legs. The likes of Fede Valverde, Ferland Mendy did very good games, which is very good for Real Madrid as well. And everything seems to be all right for the team now. I'm not saying that Real Madrid is going to compete for the biggest trophies,
right,
but they are definitely in a very positive run.
Okay, well, they're level with Barcelona on top of the table, 1 point ahead of Sevilla in the Liga. And in the Champions League, they're not absolutely sure of going through yet. PSG, who they face on Tuesday, are. Real Madrid looking, Alvaro, better than they did back in September when they got done 3-0.
Of course.
In Paris.
Definitely.
And hungry for revenge now as the Parisians arrive. How are PSG looking, Jules?
Really good. Really good now that Neymar is back as well. He made his return on Friday night against Lille. He played 65 minutes, which was always the time that had been decided for him to play. Got subbed off and went straight into the dressing room, as you do, a la Cristiano Ronaldo. He looked more that he was frustrated by his own performance and the lack of impact that he had on that game, more than he was unhappy with Tuchel for taking him off, or because that was, again, always the plan. But he looked very short of match fitness, which was normally he hadn't played for 6 weeks before that. So there's a question now and a debate back home on whether he's going to start or not on Tuesday night at the Bernabeu, which I think would be a huge... It would feel like a humiliation if he was not started. But the thing is, Icardi has to start. Di Maria has to start because they both have been incredible in the last few weeks. Di Maria, especially 9 goals and 9 assists in 19 games this season in all competition, which is pretty impressive. Kylian Mbappe will start as well. So can you also play Neymar? So make the four fantastic together and you play a different system, or do you keep your 4-3-3 formation like played so well in the first game against them? Thomas Tuchel would have to decide, but it would be very hard to drop Di Maria, for example, and to bring Neymar in, especially in the form he's in.
Did you see Zinedine Zidane's comments about Mbappe at all, where he says that he's been in love with him for ages?
He said that on Monday, yes.
Eden Hazard gave an interview in Le Parisien on Monday, talking about Kylian Mbappe as well, and said, if I can bring him to Bernabeu, I'll definitely try, and saying that he's basically already one of the best, much better at 20 than Eden Hazard himself was at 20, for example. So there's a lot of, like, love shown to Kylian Mbappe by Real Madrid.
I'm sure PSG are delighted about that. Nasser Al-Khelaifi. No,
yeah, Leonardo
Thank
last
you.
Week. Yeah, Leonardo especially was really frustrated and said, listen, Zinedine Zidane should talk about his own players before talking about mine. PSG are trying to get Mbappe to sign a new deal at the club. He still has 2.5 years left on his contract. And they think that if he commits for a longer period, then they will have a chance to keep him for at least more than one season. But it's a tricky one. So those talks are ongoing. But, I mean, the story between Kylian and Real Madrid, we've told it many times. You know, he was there when he was 12 doing trials with the youth teams. They used to send him shirts. They used to welcome him and his family to visit the stadium, to visit the training ground, to meet Zidane and all the top players. So they've been after him since he was 12 years old.
I was going to say that looks like Real Madrid and PSG, despite all the rumors and all that, they don't have such a bad relationship. Julien probably knows better, but last season there were a few rumors that Neymar would end up being a Real Madrid player. And Real Madrid sent an official statement saying that that wasn't true. It's the first time I've seen Real Madrid saying that publicly. You know, there are plenty of players associated to Real Madrid. Yes, this player will go, this player will move to Real Madrid. And normally the club stays silent about it or aloof about all these things. Not that time with Neymar, which...
They were careful to maintain good relations with PSG.
I think that he represented that, yes.
Okay. Also on Tuesday, the other Madrid side are also going to be looking for revenge. Atletico Madrid, that is. They're Juventus, where they lost 3-0 last year.
Three goals from Cristiano Ronaldo.
That's so true. And where was he this weekend?
Well, he wasn't in Bergamo with the team as they came back from behind to beat Atalanta 3-1. He was left out of the squad, officially because they had this game in mind.
Oh, when you say officially, though, James, what are you suggesting?
Well, Ronaldo played in the international break for Portugal.
Very well.
Partly because those two games were crucial to them qualifying. And since he's been back, Juventus have pretty much maintained the line that they had when they took him off in their last game before the international break by saying, look, he's been carrying an injury with his knee. It's impacting on the rest of his body. He hasn't been able to train consistently, and that's affected his performances. Ronaldo, in the international break, kind of did come out and say, yes, look, I never like to be substituted. I've made sacrifices for the team. You know, basically, I gripped my teeth and went ahead and played, even though other players would basically said, sorry, coach, you know, leave me out, which I think, you know, in some respects, maybe it would have been better for him to do that rather than just go through the motions, sulk, get subbed. So, I mean, he has been rested essentially with this game in mind. Mm. The issue, James, I would say, is that Dybala and Higuain look fantastic and are scoring and are combining in a much more fluent way than when Ronaldo is on the pitch. And you always get those Real Madrid numbers of Ronaldo's shot volume, you know, how he shoots more than anyone else in Europe. You wonder when he's out the team, it's like, when he's in the team, it's like, how many shots is he taking away from the other players in the side? And but he will come back in this game. I mean, ultimately, the Atletico knockout game, second leg last year, is his biglietto di visita. This is why you signed me. And in fact, he said that after the game. So I'm sure he will come back into the side for this one.
Juve already through, but a win here would see them top the group. If Atletico lose this game, though, Alvaro, they could be in real trouble because an eventual winner of the other clash between Lokomotiv and Bayer Leverkusen would be just a point behind them going into the final match day. How's Atletico's form coming into this game?
Bad form. They couldn't beat Granada this weekend, and we all know that Granada were topping the table not long ago, but since we talk about Granada as La Liga leaders, they have clinched only 1 point out of 12. Ooh. So yeah, it was inevitable, but it happened too quickly for them. Back to Atletico de Madrid. Look, there is one stat that explains very well the situation they are at. I mean, they have been unable to score in the first half in 12 of the last 15 games.
Wow.
Which is like they for any reason, they don't jump onto the pitch with the right mentality and the right game. And it takes them ages to open or to break the deadlock and then to defend it. Because the other day against Granada, they scored first and then Granada equalized very quickly out of a set piece. So I think that Atletico is not in a good moment at the minute. They've got two very important casualties in the defense. Mm-hmm. Jimenez is training, but I don't think that he will make it for the game against Juve. And Savic is also out.
Oh, right.
And João Félix played 15 minutes against Granada, but I don't think that Diego Pablo Simeone will rely on him for 90 minutes.
Okay.
The thing is, though, and Italians always put a lot of stock in this, is that Morata has probably been their best player,
yeah.
Their most consistent goal scorer as well. 7, I think, in all competitions. And there is always the inimitable law of the X, who will come back and haunt on his return to the Allianz Stadium.
It's not my experience.
Well,
he's got many places to return to as well, Alvaro Morata.
The thing is, we mentioned about how this was the calling card for Ronaldo joining Juventus, that hat-trick. But in terms of Sarri establishing himself at Juventus as well, the first game against Atletico was really important. Second half performance at the Wanda, they were magnificent. They scored 2 goals and they conceded 2 late, both from set pieces, which was a weakness then. Remember, they conceded 2 from set pieces in the game previous to that, which was the 4-3 win against Napoli. They've sorted it since then. They haven't conceded a single goal from set pieces. And I think one of the really interesting things is De Ligt. There's been a lot of scrutiny of his performances. I thought he was brilliant against Atalanta in difficult circumstances at the weekend. And I imagine, even though we've talked about Atletico being a bit of a diesel engine, that they'll probably need him and Bonucci again on in midweek.
And Atletico played Barcelona next weekend in the league as well. So it could be a very tough week for them. To draw against Granada, whatever happens against Juve, and then facing Barcelona. Not that Barcelona look good, but still it's a hell of a game.
And the thing is that in the last three big away games in Champions League, Atletico de Madrid lost 4-0 against Borussia Dortmund last year, 3-0 against Juve last season as well, and 2-1 against Bayer Leverkusen this season, like a month ago. But Bayer Leverkusen destroyed them. I mean, it could have been a 4-1. So away from home against top teams like Juve, Atletico de Madrid is finding it very difficult. And back to Álvaro Morata, yes, he's playing really well. He'd better play very well because Diego Costa is no longer there until 2020 because he's got a hernia problem and he underwent surgery.
Okay, all right. Big game that on Tuesday. We're going to look at some of the key Wednesday games after this.
Jose Mourinho here. Let me tell you a thing or two about Special. An 18-year career at the top of football management, that's special. League titles in every country I've worked, that's special. What isn't special is winning the daily jackpot on Paddy Power Games.
That's right, Jose. Yes, someone wins an average £40,000 jackpot every single day. So if you win, don't think you're special.
No respect.
Get over it. Daily jackpots by Paddy Power Games. Jackpots must be awarded by 11 p.m. and vary from day to day. Jackpot is shared with other operators. Available on selected games. T's and C's at paddypower.com. 18+BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Jans. Vor die Füße von Sancho. Flanke, Tor! Der Ausgleich, Marco Reus, 92. Minute.
How about a little bit of Borussia Dortmund and Barcelona, Rafa? Lucky they're not coming in off a humiliating 3-3 draw against the worst team in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, I mean, the atmosphere is not good at Dortmund. They had the AGM on Sunday. The team was booed by some of the members turning up for that. Hans-Joachim Watzke, the CEO, made a public pronouncement saying it's really down to Favre, dear Lucien Favre, he said, and the team to sort things out, to play with a different attitude, to find that togetherness that's been missing. And the problem for Dortmund is that, once again, the man of the first half performance was so lacking in aggression and focus in everything that you need, really, to have the foundation to play your beautiful football, that fingers were once again pointed at Favre, because he is the guy that doesn't, for whatever reason, I think, finds the right notes on the emotional piano for this team. And they go in, you know, on slow jams and just cannot turn up.
Right. The way, I'm not sure I understand that at all. But
it's slightly mixed metaphor.
Right. The way that Mamba, who disappointingly only got two because five would have been perfect. Yeah. But the way that he sprung continuously the Dortmund defence, is that something that particularly concerns you when you're looking at what Barcelona could do?
Yes, of course. But the problem, I wouldn't say, wasn't so much the defence. The problem was that Dortmund, as Marco Reus publicly said, didn't know how to press properly. I mean, it sounded like a big indictment of the coach, and he was careful then to backtrack a little bit and said, you know what, but he always sets us up so well, so I don't really understand why. But Favre isn't a pressing guy. Favre is a guy who says, you know, we'll play deep, we wait for them to make a mistake, and then we take the ball, and then we play our game, and we'll play through this team. And sometimes, maybe with a bit more counter-attacking when you have the likes of Jadon Sancho there. But Dortmund is a squad, if you look at the profile of these players, some of them are quite young, some of them are the sort of players that would maybe strike you as a little bit technical, maybe a little bit phlegmatic, you know, your Brunts, your Götzes, your Hazards, and not necessarily players who sort of adhere to the stereotype of warriors that you're going to win all these battles with. And when that kind of structure of the team, the psychological structure of the team, if you will, is combined with someone like Favre, who is very neutral and technical in his rhetoric, I think it makes for a slightly sort of anemic combination. And at Dortmund, people want emotions, they want excitement, they want aggression, they want fight, they want all these things, and they're not getting it. Right. And that is the deeper frustration.
Sancho's got emotions, hasn't he?
Yeah, it was very interesting to see the article in The Athletic, obviously very well sourced from his camp, that he felt humiliated, he felt disrespected to a certain extent, I don't remember the exact wording, but I wonder if maybe there was a bit of a misunderstanding. I mean, Favre, yes, took him off after 35 minutes against Bayern, you will recall. Mm. And Favre did say, well, he wasn't good enough. But Favre then also immediately said, well, he couldn't train properly for 2 days. So the way it sounded to me And bear in mind, this is someone who speaks not the greatest of German, with a heavy French accent, and then that gets translated from the German into English. So I think a lot of the nuance gets lost, maybe for somebody like Sancho. But it sounded to me more like an excuse rather than an accusation. I think you were saying he wasn't good enough because he couldn't be good enough, having not trained properly all week. It didn't sound to me as if he was being thrown under the bus. Maybe Sancho misunderstood. Maybe, if you want to be more cynical, they're looking for a way to engineer a situation where maybe leaving will be easier. I don't know. I'd like to think it's the first option, that really there's just a bit of miscommunication there.
Okay. Barcelona, meantime, a 2-1 win coming from behind against Leganés.
Yes, and they are in an enviable position if you look at it I think objectively, because they are top of La Liga, and if they win this time against Dortmund, they are going to end up being mathematically first in this Champions League group stage, which is very good, obviously.
Inter, meanwhile, are in Prague, so if they win that game, which, you know, form suggests they might, then whoever doesn't win this game could be, I mean, it's going to get quite tense for anyone who doesn't get the result in this Barcelona-Borussia Dortmund clash.
Yeah, and the problem is, especially for Lucien Favre, that Hans-Joachim Watzke in that speech also explicitly name-checked Barcelona and the next game against Hertha as games that needed to bring a turnaround. And then he also said, of course, you have our trust as well, Lucien.
Dear Lucien.
So it's one of those situations where you think it might be almost sort of an ultimatum. You know, win or we might have to get rid of you.
I think equally fascinating, though, is that Barcelona have the prospect of winning this game and finishing top of the group, but they can still go out as well. Because if Dortmund beat Barcelona and then Inter win against Slavia and against Barcelona at San Siro, then we could be seeing Dortmund and Inter progressing instead, which would be a hell of a turnaround. And to be honest, on the balance of play, from what we've seen from Barcelona in this group, not undeserved.
Not just in the group, even in La Liga.
Even in La Liga.
The way they play is horrible.
The other day against Leganés, Ernesto Valverde tried to change something, and he played with a 4-2-3-1, which is kind of unprecedented at Barcelona. They've been playing with a 4-3-3 since Johan Cruyff, because he needed to change something, and that didn't work either. And the second goal of Arturo Vidal, the one that finally signature the comeback, it was a disaster in itself, because Arturo Vidal was in an offside position in a corner kick, and the ball came deflected from a Leganés defender into his feet. But Arturo Vidal was in a place where he shouldn't be. So there is a problem in there that goes beyond Ernesto Valverde, even though the easiest solution to fix this Barcelona problem will be to change the manager rather than 24 or 25 players. But I wouldn't be surprised if Barcelona loses against Dortmund, because they deserve to lose when they played at Signal Iduna Park. They didn't manage to beat Slavia Prague, and forget about the record of 34 games unbeaten at Camp Nou in Champions League. These records come to an end one day, and I wouldn't be surprised if it happens this week.
It could be this Wednesday. Yeah. Wow. Also on Wednesday, Liverpool hosting a Napoli side who beat them in Naples. Liverpool, though, with the advantage of being 1 point clear in the group and also not being in open civil warfare with themselves, unlike Napoli. What's the latest there, James? They, again, didn't go for a retiro on the weekend.
No, they did go and play Milan and were disappointing. Today, the club is still deliberating what action to take against the players, so that's been hanging over them throughout the international break, throughout the preparation for the game against AC Milan at the weekend. They were disappointing in that, even though they took the lead against the run of play. Just to put this into perspective, James, this is Napoli's worst run since 2013 in all competitions. They're winless in six games. And De Laurentiis, the owner, who's spent the international break in LA working on movie projects, has also been consulting the club's lawyers about what action to take, whether they fine the players as a whole 25% of their monthly wage, or if they determine that there were some ulterior, graver violations, even 50% of that. So there's a really bad atmosphere around the team, and I think at this moment in time, whilst there are players, senior players like Kalidou Koulibaly and Dries Mertens, who have a real sense of belonging, a real attachment, not just with the club, but with the city and its people, this is going to put all of that very much to the test. I think particularly with Carlo Ancelotti, who has had a very, very hard time being told that his players are going to be put into detention, and B, then seeing the players essentially abandon him after that Salzburg game. I think it was a big surprise, A, that Ancelotti didn't resign, and B, that he was still there when the players came back from their international break as well, particularly with one big high-profile Premier League job which came available around about the same time.
Yeah.
Are they really going to sell Koulibaly, Mertens, Insigne and Callejon in January? Because one of the threats that De Laurentiis is putting is like, you are out in January. Could they do that? That would weaken their team so massively.
Well, I think the issue with that, Jules, is a little bit like what Inter found with Mario Icardi, is that all of a sudden you have a very, very good player who, at his best, is his market value is, you know, upwards of 100 million. And whenever clubs are made aware that there is a situation like this at Napoli and the club wants to sell these kind of players, all of a sudden they can't get the kind of money that they would usually think they could get for top players like that. The issue with Mertens is that his contract is up at the end of the year. Callejon's contract is up at the end of the year as well. A number of players are about to enter the final years of their contract once this season comes up. We're talking about Milik, Zielinski, really important players for this team. So it does feel like we're really at a major crossroads, major turning point for De Laurentiis and his time at Napoli, because he's usually always, I'll sell Cavani, I'll sell Lavezzi, I'll get you a Higuain, I'll get you a Mertens or something like that. Or when the other managers have moved on, Mazzarri will upgrade to Benitez. Benitez leaves, will get you Sarri. When Sarri leaves, will get you Ancelotti. Now, I feel this is the most delicate position that he's found himself in his time at Napoli.
All right. They have a 4-point lead over Red Bull Salzburg in the group. But picking up points at Anfield is going to be difficult on Wednesday. It's all about Group H, isn't it, really, Jules? Valencia-Chelsea. It's so tight in this group. Ajax, the aforementioned Chelsea and Valencia, all on 7 points.
Mm. Wow. With Lille basically being the referee in that group, because they could potentially decide who goes through and who doesn't.
Yeah, they could even go through themselves. It's unlikely. They need to beat Ajax.
They look so good at the weekend. I don't know if you saw the first goal they scored. Yeah. The build-up play was just something else.
Ajax-esque, wasn't it?
So Ajax-esque. In many ways, it was even better than a lot of football that they've played we've seen this season.
Yeah, a game against Heracles which saw neither team touching the ball in the first minute of the fixture as a protest against racism. Valencia, Alvaro, they warmed up for Chelsea's visit. They, of course, won at Stamford Bridge.
Mm-hmm. They won in that way.
In
that way, with Ross Barkley missing a penalty.
That's
because,
right,
as far as I can remember, there was a player, William, was it, who made Ross Barkley very nervous before taking the penalty. But it's true that Valencia has a chance to qualify, a really good chance, but they have to play against Chelsea and against Ajax. They don't have to play Lille anymore.
Oh. And they lost this weekend, didn't they?
Yes, against Betis. In the last minute, Canales scored a beautiful goal to put Betis ahead. I cannot see Valencia beating Chelsea on the basis of what I've seen this weekend. Valencia being relatively poor against Betis and Chelsea playing toe-to-toe and face-to-face with Manchester City.
Yeah.
I think that logic says that Chelsea should be winning this game, also because Valencia has a few players who could not feature and they are pivotal to the team, like Coquelin, who is still to be seen whether he can make it, but he's doubtful. Also, Garay, the main centre-back, may be out. And Gonzalo Guedes, he's been out the whole season. So there are key players in there missing for Valencia.
Right. Whereas Chelsea have a much stronger lineup potentially now than they did when they last met.
Well, and Christian Pulisic, he has taken the place of Mason Mount, who started the season incredibly as well. Valencia is not very consistent. And all that said, they have managed to be competitive in Europe, much more than in La Liga, which I don't know what I can attribute it to, but I guess that it's a mixture of motivation, a mixture of the Champions League can be a great display window for few Valencia players as well, and they are doing well in the European stage, but Ajax and Chelsea seem to be better than Valencia, really. Ajax destroyed Valencia in the game at Valencia 3-0, and Chelsea should have at least gotten a draw against Chelsea back in September here at Stamford Bridge.
Well, we'll see on Wednesday. Well, that's some of the highlights of the midweek fixtures in the Champions League. Of course, there's Europa League as well, Jules. We'll talk about that later on. Yeah. After this, though, let's get the rest of the news from the weekend's games.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Hey, Rafa, that Borussia Dortmund 3-3 draw at home to Paderborn wasn't the only big shock. In an interesting round of Bundesliga results, you had leaders Borussia Mönchengladbach losing to Union Berlin.
Yeah. Union.
They're now only 1 point clear.
I mean, it's still an amazing season for them, but yes, it was slightly unexpected. I think they weren't quite ready for the atmosphere. Certainly, they weren't ready about some of the stuff thrown at them before the game.
There were barges full of Mönchengladbach supporters.
One went down the Spree River, which is a lovely little trip. Takes about 3 hours from the centre of town down to the Alte Försterei Stadion of Union. And as you said in the intro, James, the proverbial also hit the fans in this instance, because it wasn't just eggs, but also...
Fecal matter.
Yeah, smellier stuff, which was, a little
nobody likes to see that.
Mm. But on the pitch, Union just did their thing, which is this sort of very simple but very high energy direct approach. You know, to stay in the musical realm that we've visited before with Dortmund, very much like a kind of Ramon sort of thing. You know, just going bang, 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 rah, rah, rah. And they couldn't handle it. Borussia Mönchengladbach.
Right, looking forward to more examples of musical genres throughout the show. Perhaps as we discuss Bayern and the big beat they laid on Fortuna Düsseldorf.
Yeah, and there was a musical part to this as well, because Fortuna were wearing specially commissioned shirts with the Totenhosen logo on it. Yeah.
The dead trousers.
Absolutely, and they played a little bit like their trousers.
Right.
And Thomas Müller went up to Ruben Hennings after the game and really wanted that shirt.
Who's Ruben Hennings? Hemmings?
Oh, the Fortuna striker. Really wanted a shirt from him.
Okay.
But in pure footballing terms, Bayern were once again...
Did he get the shirt?
He got the shirt.
Okay.
Under Hansi Flick, fantastic. The third clean sheet in a row.
Yep. 10 goals scored, none conceded in the last three.
Yes, that's correct. Mm. And... they play like a completely different team, or you might say like the team that Bayern used to play like way before the likes of Ancelotti and Kovac ruined their football.
Yeah.
So it was very interesting to listen to the players afterwards, because of course they could have been just nice and not talk about what happened in the past, but it basically couldn't help themselves. Müller, for example, was saying, well, you know, it really helps to have a plan when you're out there on the pitch. Neuer said, and Neuer's been most diplomatic people in this dressing room in recent years, he said, you know what, it makes a huge difference if the different parts of the teams are 30, 40 metres apart, or if you're 10 and 50 metres apart. You have a connection, you can trust each other, you can communicate, and you have much more control and much quicker ways of getting into dangerous areas. So basically, in one or two sentences, completely taken apart all of the tactical ideas that Kovac had, which basically just did not work for this team, where the defence was very deep and then the midfield was often lost, and then there was no fluidity up front. And Bayern have looked...
all the manager's fault.
Well, Bayern have looked outstandingly good, and they seem to believe it was all the manager's fault. So Hansi Flick is soon getting to the point, I think, where he might cause a problem by being too good.
Mm.
And being linked with taking the job over for the full time, to the point maybe where Bayern feel under pressure to give it to him, but we haven't quite reached it yet.
Why would that be a problem? Do you think a Solskjaer effect or something, or what?
Yeah, I'm thinking that Bayern are obviously negotiating and sounding out replacements for the summer, if not for the winter. But, you know, if he keeps winning and winning and winning, it becomes a little more difficult, a little bit more awkward than to push him out. But he is a guy who already has in his contract that whatever happens next, he will continue to be the assistant manager. So he doesn't necessarily, I think, have this grand ambition, although he enjoys it at the moment because team are playing really well. The Belgrade game will be seen as a formality. There's not much they really need to do there, so they might even rest a few players. Alaba stayed at home because his girlfriend is heavily pregnant, for example. And they can concentrate on three or four more big games. They play Gladbach, I think, in 10 days' time for a real top-of-the-table clash. And then have a very, very happy Christmas. And then, you know, maybe Maurizio Pochettino for the new season.
For Bayern?
Yeah, or for January. I think it's unlikely for January. Dortmund have also started to look into this possibility, but they've been told that Pochettino is very unlikely to forgo his big payoff. I think he's officially on gardening leave, so he's still getting paid, but that only happens, of course, until he takes a new job. And I think, reading between the lines, Dortmund were told that he's quite happy not to do anything in the near future. Now, when it comes to taking over in the summer, I think, footballing-wise, Pochettino would work better at Dortmund than at Bayern, where Bayern, I think, have made up their mind, or they never quite make up their mind because there's so many different people involved, but the sentiment seems to be that they want a more possession-orientated coach, which I think wouldn't necessarily point in the direction of Pochettino. He can play good football, but he isn't in the Spanish or French school of management. So very interesting to see what happens there.
Certainly is. All right, still to come, we're going to be getting the latest from Ligue 1, the Liga, and also Serie A, with another controversy brewing around Balotelli.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Hey, Jules, Ligue 1. It's exciting, isn't it? Paris Saint-Germain top after their 2-0 win over Lille. And who's this? André Villas versus Marseille, only 8 points behind in second.
But he's doing a good job there, you know? Considering he hadn't managed for a while and he's arriving in another club that is right now thinking more about not spending money and saving money than anything else, with a lot of cuts and selling their best players to try to recoup some money because they've spent a lot since the American owner has taken over the club. So he's doing a very good job. They won at Toulouse on Sunday night. It was not pretty. They played for more than one half with 11 men against 10. And it's only in the last 15 minutes that they broke the deadlock and scored. But it's good for their confidence. It's good for their momentum as well. And I have to say, I was a bit sceptical when he arrived, but he's doing well with what he has, which is not much.
Angers still there in third place.
But Bordeaux and Paulo Sousa, the team that is climbing up the table, they beat Monaco on Sunday with Islam Slimani scoring for Monaco first and getting sent off. Monaco, by the way, are the teams in Europe with the most red cards this season.
Is that right?
Yeah, six in the top five leagues already. And that cost them a few points as well. And again, they were leading when Slimani got sent off. And then Bordeaux scored two goals to win. And Sousa is doing a really good job there.
More red cards than fans.
Monaco crowd joke. Tick. Also moving up the table, Jules, I'm so sorry. Rudy Garcia's Lyon. Back on track. They beat Nice with 10 men.
With 10 men, yeah.
Into the top half now.
Into the top half, indeed. And it was, again, not too pretty. There was more incident off the field because one of the group of ultras was celebrating the 10-year anniversary and they threw a lot of flares on the pitch. The games had to be stopped and because there was so much smoke everywhere. It was quite crazy. And Jean-Michel Aulas and Lyon, they were very unhappy. They would be hit with maybe a stadium ban or something like that because obviously you're not allowed to do that. And they understand how much the ultras have to celebrate, you know, milestones like that. A 10-year anniversary is a big one, but they should have done it in a different way. But Lyon won, again, even if it was not very convincing in terms of performance. Mm-hmm. And they have a big game against Zenit on Tuesday night in the Champions League, which could see them making a big step towards the last 16. So
is that home or away, Jules?
Away in Russia. So
right, and Zenit are 3 points behind them. So it's a key match.
Yeah, especially with RB Leipzig doing so well at the moment. Yeah. They're looking like they will go through as well. So it's a big game for them. Big game for Garcia. Let's not forget, he's, of all the managers in the Champions League right now, the one with the worst records. He's only won five games, for all the clubs he's managed. Roma, Lille, Marseille and Lyon.
Loves a 6-1 defeat or a 7-1.
Yeah, even losing to Pate Borisov, do you remember, with Roma? Yeah. So he's had a shocking time in the Champions League and this is a good time for him to actually put things right. They won in match day four and it would be very good against Benfica. It would be very good for them to win again.
All right. Meanwhile, in La Liga, Alvaro, we talked about Barcelona and Real Madrid both winning, coming from behind. There was a bit of controversy about Gerard Piqué and his off-field activities.
Yes, because we all know that Gerard Piqué likes doing plenty of things aside of football. And in fact, Barcelona...
His hips don't lie.
That's so true.
Barcelona sponsorship, Rakuten, comes from Gerard Piqué, not from Barcelona's president. It was Gerard Piqué who got that sponsor for Barcelona.
Okay. When you say he arranged that sponsorship deal, so he also acts as a kind of agent for this kind of thing?
Yes, and he's got so many contacts because he's also married to Shakira. And the amount of people they know is unbelievable. Well, the Davis Cup was played in Spain last week. Spain won it, by the way, with Rafa Nadal being unbelievable. He won every single point for Spain in the doubles and in the singles. Wow. So Rafa Nadal was the key man in Spain to win the Davis Cup.
On another level.
Yeah, yeah, as usually, the world number one.
Right.
All that said, Gerard Piqué has arranged this Davis Cup, and he's not having the best of the seasons, as well as many Barcelona players. So he's been heavily criticized for driving his attention to different places. And of course, this Davis Cup is unfocusing him, because his group, Cosmos, they have invested 3,000 million in the Davis Cup for the next 25 years. And he's the visible face of this Cosmos group. Oh. So obviously there is some pressure for Gerard Piqué, because he wants this event to be tremendously successful. It's been a good success. But at the same time, you can really tell that his performances on the pitch, and I don't want to say that Gerard Piqué shouldn't be doing something aside from football, but his performances on the pitch this season, they haven't been as good. He has received already 9 yellow cards. He's not playing against Borussia Dortmund as well, because he's suspended. And
is he taking suspension so he can organise other events, sporting events around the world?
Or he's not, he's not as quick, he's not playing well.
Skiing.
Yeah. And,
wow, that's remarkable.
And the thing is that, well, this is one of the other problems to what Barcelona is now. I mean, a team with many problems in which nothing seems to go right. And that was probably the talking point in Spain this week. The fact that Gerard Piqué encapsulates, in a way, many things that happened to Barcelona, where the veteran players, they've got some other things in their agenda apart from the football.
Even Neymar went to the Davis Cup in Madrid in between two training sessions, and Thomas Tuchel was not happy, and he said, but I'm not the police, or I'm not his dad, so can do what he wants.
Jules, and probably he was there until late in the night, because the games were finished at 3 a.m., 4 a.m. Spanish time, Davis Cup game.
It's not maybe, he was there until very late.
Crazy. Crazy. Speaking of which, on to Serie A, where Juve and Inter continue their duel on top. Inter with another fine performance against Torino in Turin. But I think we're going to start with Brescia, who've been in the news for all sorts of reasons of late, firing their manager Eugenio Corini, bringing in Fabio Grosso in his place.
He's done really well. He's lost his first two games by an aggregate score of 7-0.
Yeah. But the other big story, of course, following their game away at Verona, was the racist abuse of Mario Balotelli, and the somewhat mixed response from elements of Brescia's club and fandom to, you know, what should be done about all this. The fans suggesting that, well, there was a long communique, which we don't need to go into, but it wasn't exactly wholehearted in its support.
No, they were critical of Balotelli for being arrogant, for not applying himself, and showed solidarity with the Verona ultras and the ultra movement in general.
So this weekend, then, going into their clash with Roma, Fabio Grosso seemed to have a similar view of Balotelli's application. He didn't train hard enough, so he was left out of the team for the trip down to the Stadio Olimpico.
Yeah, so what we're talking about with Ronaldo being subbed off and going straight down the tunnel and then leaving, but in a game, Balotelli essentially did that in training, because Grosso, who hooked him at half-time in his first game in charge, basically was taking a training session in midweek and said, I don't like what I'm seeing from you, you're not putting enough effort in. All these other managers that you've had in the past have said exactly the same. So what I'm saying is nothing new. You need to buck your ideas up, go home, have a think about it, and then come back. The following day, he had a meeting with Massimo Cellino, the president of Brescia, which was, again, so supposed to kind of not remind him of responsibility, but just remind him to say, Mario Balotelli, we've invested a lot of money in you. We want you to be the success that we know you can be. Please. However, he's then left out of the squad for the Roma game, which they lose 3-0. He's posting on Instagram saying he's getting some treatment, and he'll let, you know, the media speculate about what exactly has gone on there. Massimo Cellino then shows up for a meeting of Serie A, the league, this morning, and tries to crack a joke, but it fails spectacularly.
Che nero, cosa vi devo dire? Che sta lavorando per schiarirsi, però c'ha molte difficoltà. Cosa vuoi dire?
So that's Cellino, asked how Balotelli is, and he says he's black, but he's trying to lighten himself.
Mm.
And the play on words there would be that he's in a black mood and he's trying to explain himself.
Yeah, I suppose, an idiom in Italian is that if you are nero, you are black with anger.
Furious, yeah.
You're furious.
Yeah.
And he's trying to clear things up.
Right.
But the double entendre here is very problematic.
Such a
indeed.
Bizarre thing
it's
to
not
say.
Problematic, it's racist. And, right. Again, we'll have to look for the leadership from the league where there is none. As to whether Massimo Cellino gets punished for this. I mean, he is in the right place at the moment because he's actually meeting with these people who will be scrolling through their phones and seeing this video. Action has to be taken here. Just to go back, James, on the racist abuse that Mario Balotelli suffered when he was playing in Verona, there was a section of the lateral stand at the Bentegodi was supposed to be closed, and then over the international break they decided to suspend the closure of that pending further investigation. So again, that was just seen as a very disappointing matter and just general reaction to a player who, yeah, does have his problems, but ultimately has been racially abused.
Right.
And as Massimo Cellino said when asked for comment before the game against Roma about this training ground bus stop between Balotelli and Grosso, said that Balotelli hasn't had a smile on his face since he suffered that racist abuse, since the communique was put out by the Brescia Ultras, essentially...
Half blaming him for it.
So I think there's a lot to unpick here. And again, whilst a lot of the stories over the weekend have been Balotelli's time at his hometown club is already coming to an end, you can completely sympathise with him.
I think you absolutely can. Yeah.
So,
okay, well, that's a really unpleasant situation, and hopefully it gets sorted out for him one way or another, because, as you say, he may have his issues, but I think we would all like to see him do well again and be happy. That game, by the way, that the rest of the Brescia team had at the Stadio Olimpico was remarkable because
of Smaldini.
Quando Pellegrini va col destro ad uscire verso Smalling, l'ultima deviazione, forse di Dzeko, ma Smalling a fare.
He scored. He set up another goal,
right?
And he was involved in a third as well.
He also set up Dzeko's.
I don't think he was actually given that assist.
Was he not?
No. I think it was wrong because ultimately I think he heads it against the defender and it's a loose ball.
Oh, okay.
But I'm with you, James. He should have two assists. Becomes the first English player to have scored two goals in a single season in Italy since Bex. Roma again. Pushing, I think his agents are currently in Rome as we speak on Monday to see if they can thrash out this agreement with Manchester United to get that deal done permanently.
Right, and maybe sign Phil Jones as well, because there's no end to the good they could do to these...
What we should say about Roma is since the start of the season, but particularly since Smalling and Mancini, who they signed, who also scored a brilliant goal, and he's a centre-back too, who's been occasionally playing midfield this season. Roma have only been behind for 43 minutes in Serie A this season. Which I think, given all of the problems that Fonseca has faced with doing business late in the transfer window, overcoming the disappointment of last season and all the kind of issues that there were with last season, a fan base that had kind of lost its love not for the team, but was in open kind of dissent from the ownership. And you think of the injury crisis, they had 18 different injuries at some stage. That's why Mancini, the centre-back, was playing him in field. They've done really well, I think, to still be in the top four and to be a real credible kind of team for qualifying for the Champions League next year. We should go from Smaldini to Maldini himself.
All right, yeah.
Because Daniel Maldini was named in Milan's squad for the Napoli game, so a third generation of Maldini.
Didn't actually come on, though.
He didn't actually come, but he has signed professional papers as well. He signed a contract in the international break.
Plays as a number 10.
He does, which, I think when his squad number's given, maybe they won't unretire the number 3, which was Maldini's shirt, which was only going to be unretired for one of his sons.
Right.
Maybe they'll give him, I don't know, Gianni Rivera's 10 shirt or something like
that.
We'll have to see.
All right.
I think Calhanoglu's got it.
If Ibrahimovic isn't wearing that by then.
Well, we'll see, eh?
We'll see about that. See, okay, well, listen, the other thing I was going to ask about is the other Milan team, which is Inter, who had that fine 3-0 win away at Torino. Lukaku getting his 10th of the campaign. Inter off to an even better start than they had under Trapattoni, in the record-breaking season.
Yeah, so they've won 11 of their first 13 league games for the first time since 1950.
Wow.
You mention Lukaku already in double figures, and to find a a new signing to have scored that many goals at the start of his Inter career. You have to go back to around about the same time, 48-49 with Isfan Nayers. I mean, this was the story of the weekend, I think, in Serie A. Lukaku and Lautaro again doing the business for Inter, who were perfect away from home in the league as well. The strike pairing at Juventus, the HD, Higuain and Dybala, who turned the game around, which looked beyond them.
Right.
In Bergamo.
What about Inter's other South American striker, Gabigol?
Ah, yes. I mean, this is great,
could he go back?
I mean, well, remember the Dortmund game where you have Conte essentially complaining, saying, you know, the club hasn't backed me enough. They should have made more signings in the summer. And yet you've got Icardi, who is still an Inter player, banging in the goals at PSG. And then you've got Gabigol, 31 in 38, and is the man of the match in the Copa del Libertadores final. Gabigol, who was signed when the takeover by Suning happened. He was their big signing. And one of their biggest flops as well. He scored one goal, I think, for them. And then went to Benfica.
He struggled to get game time either, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he was being coached by De Boer at the time. De Boer, who subsequently has had some choice things to say. He said, I think this was in an interview a few weeks ago when he was at Atlanta, where he was saying, we couldn't believe it when he was in training. Yeah, we'd been told this kid was called Gabby Goal, but for us, he was Gabby No Goal. because he just harsh from De Boer, who had such an outstanding record at Inter and Crystal
and
Palace
until he went to Atlanta. Yeah, do you think they'll bring him back now, or are they just going to look to unload him in South America?
Well, at the moment, it looks like they're Flamengo definitely want to sign him,
right?
And I think they've been haggling over the price. Obviously, with this performance at the weekend, his price is going to go up. Inter looking to they can bring in a lot of money for Icardi, Gianmario, all these other players that they've got out on loan. I wonder if they have a conversation about this, about bringing him back and seeing if they can rehabilitate his, well, it was a non-starter his career in Europe. Maybe he's more mature now. He's going out with Neymar's sister.
He is indeed. but and he's still only 23. So, yeah. You know, he arrived so young in Italy and it was such a change and adaptation and all of that, if you want. Maybe now he'd be more ready for it. I don't know.
Brilliant. Many, many thanks. All right. Well, very shortly, we'll have a big chat about anything else you fancy, including the Europa League and Antonio Conte's positional play. but first, some odds with producer Ben, who's been speaking to Paddy Power.
Thank you very much, Jimbo. Here he is, Lee Price, on the line from Paddy Power. Lee, let's start in Serie A and the sack race. Could Carlo Ancelotti be the next manager to go?
Well, with all the chaos in England, our traders are fed up of sack races. But they do give me these prices. It's 3-1, Ancelotti leaves Naples before Christmas this year, and it's odds on 1-2 that he's gone before the end of the current Serie A season. As for where he'll go next, you can get 40-1 he's next Arsenal manager, the same price as the next Man United manager, or 10-1 he's next West Ham manager. But before you get too excited, that's the same price as Lee Bowyer.
To the Champions League then, Real Madrid versus PSG is the biggie. Are PSG the real deal, and can they go and win at the Bernabeu?
Yeah, are they the real deal? Well, we make Real the favourites here, but only just. The hosts 13-10 to get the win, with PSG 15-8 and the draw 13-5. But PSG are well clear of Real Madrid in the outright betting. That's who will win the tournament. The French side are third favourites at 6-1, behind Man City and Liverpool, of course, with Real Madrid a distant 16-1 in that market.
And finally, Lee, RB Leipzig are on an incredible scoring run. How many times will they find the net against Benfica on Wednesday?
Yeah, this won't surprise you. They're odds on to win this match, 4-9 to get the 3 points. And it's the same price they score at least twice against Benfica. While it's short odds, 8-5, they score 3 or more. And it's still not a huge price, 9-2, they score at least 4 goals in this game. They're certainly worth watching.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop. All right then, James Horncastle, we've been waiting all day to hear about Antonio Conte's advice to young athletes about how to, you know, without, etc.
It's more what to do before a match, or what not to do before a match, right?
Right, because you know some people say you shouldn't have intimate relations with your partner before a big fixture.
Not Romario. Romario was doing the opposite.
Ronaldinho as well. Trust me.
This was from an interview in L'Equipe, James.
Nice.
It was reported in the Italian media's Contest Karma Sutra.
Nice.
But the thing is, there's only one position.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a very thin one-page book that Antonio Conte essentially delivers to his players.
But the question to him was, have you read the Karma Sutra? And he says, no. And he laughs, but he said, but I've been a player, and this is the
player.
Advice.
A player.
Yeah,
play on, player.
So basically, Antonio says, you want to keep things to a minimum.
Yeah.
Don't go on for ages. Keep it as brief as possible and make sure your partner is on top so you expend as little energy as possible.
Mm.
Yeah. So there you go.
But the best bit as well is the end, which hasn't been translated too much. Well, I haven't seen it. He says, and preferably, the player does it with his wife. And do you know why?
Yeah, because then he has less pressure to perform well.
Exactly. Yeah. Whereas if it was a new girl or another girl, he would maybe try to impress with his wife, whether it's good or not. You know, it's okay.
Which surprised me. Conte leaves no detail.
That was the leading of the question. Mm. It was all about details to prepare for a game, etc. And then the question was, even sexually.
This would have gone down really well with Mrs. Conte.
All right. But the only thing that will go down with Mrs. Conte by the side of it.
Well, I mean, this is quite a segue. But, of course, Conte has been receiving some post over the international break. Have you not seen this?
Go on.
Where he's been at Inter's offices in Milan. They've received threatening letters.
Oh, with the bullet.
With the bullet in there. Yeah. And also, I think, one addressed to his fitness coach as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So there's an investigation.
Is this in any way related to these letters?
No, I think this was prior to that. Yeah.
In all seriousness as well, this is serious, but it's a very good interview in L'Equipe magazine where he also says, which surprised me a bit, that he wants his player to visualise a game before it started. A lot of managers would say, I don't want my players to think too much about the game because otherwise they will play in their head and then not do well on the pitch. He says, no, I want them to visualise everything. I want them to play the game in their head before the game has even started, which is very unusual from a manager.
Maybe while they're engaged in other activities.
Well, yeah. I knew that you were going to... Yeah, of course, yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I have to say, it sounds an incredible interview. And well done to L'Equipe magazine because it's way better than a lot of the stuff you have to read.
Yeah, it's from their correspondent in Italy, Valentin Paluzzi, who's doing a really good job there.
He certainly is.
Was he known for scoring?
Conte. Well, got the occasional goal, but yeah.
Now, Europa League... Who's excited about the Europa League, and if so, why? Which fixtures? Jules?
Yes, I mean, Arsenal against Eintracht Frankfurt is probably the pick of... If you look at it, it's
Frankfurt
not a good week.
Fans are not allowed to come along.
No, which
could
is a real shame.
Amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Why is that?
Because they didn't want a good atmosphere at the Emirates?
No, they misbehaved.
Did they?
Yeah, in previous games.
Right.
They had been warned repeatedly.
Wolves are off in Braga, which is always fun, isn't it? With their...
It's a rock and a hard place.
Exactly. Yeah, Wolves just needed a point to qualify.
A cliffhanger.
Alvaro.
Yeah, I was going to say, it can be a really bad week for two Portuguese giants. If Porto loses in Europa League, they are out of contention.
Wow.
And if Benfica loses in Champions League, same thing applies to them. So it can be really bad for them both.
Wow.
It's amazing when Jorge Jesus leaves Benfica and is no longer under the curse of Bela Gutmann, he wins the Copa Libertadores.
It's true.
In very spectacular manner as well. So, you know.
Yeah.
What are Lazio going to do against Cluj?
Oh, it's practically already over, isn't it, for them? Mm. I mean, I think this is actually quite a good thing if you're a Laziale because they're playing some sensational football at the moment. 5 wins in a row. They've scored 2 or more goals in 8 consecutive games.
Right.
The last time they did that was back in like the 1930s. Immobile scored in his last 8 games as well. He's on a hell of a run. And I think they want to concentrate on trying to get into the Champions League rather than just... I think a lot of their players who've been around there for a long time now are just fed up with playing in the Europa League.
Right.
So, fair.
Are you suggesting that that's what's been behind their last-minute defeats against...
No, I think, Celtic... I mean, those were really fun games. Mm. The doubleheader against Celtic and... some of the Celtic fans' reaction to the antics of Lazio fans in Glasgow was pretty entertaining as well.
Yeah.
I think it's got away from them in the Europa League, James. I think ultimately they legitimately tried to do something in that competition, but now I think they're in such a compromised position that they're doing so well in Serie A. I think they might just look at it and think, right, let's focus on that. If Atalanta can get into the Champions League, why can't we?
Don't think the rest of Europe would miss them too much were they to fail to qualify. Getafe might make the knockout stages.
Not yet, not after this Thursday, because no matter what happens, they can still, they could still be out, but they are on course to qualify. Espanyol is qualified. Sevilla is qualified as well. So well done for Spanish teams, because what you do in Europa League counts a lot for the UEFA coefficient,
right,
as well.
Right.
And Getafe, I think that they've got a genuine chance of qualifying. Basically, they need to get 4 points, as far as I am not wrong with this.
Okay, they're away at Daniel Sturridge's Trabzonspor. Getafe have only made the knockout stages of European competition once before, Alvaro.
Yeah, they played the Europa League.
Well, the UEFA Cup, as it was.
That was the UEFA Cup.
Yeah.
In 2008, they managed to get to the quarterfinals. Mm. They got this nickname, the Euro Getafe, obviously.
Okay.
And they were a team that you would have been very surprised about them being so far in the UEFA knockout stages, because they didn't have any particular star. They were a bunch of journeymen who happened to be together at the right time, and they were about to knock out Bayern Munich in the UEFA quarterfinals. It was a 4-4 in the aggregate.
Wow.
And I remember that Luca Toni had to score a goal in the 120th minute of the last game just to knock out Getafe finally. But they seemed to be unbeatable that day. Getafe was really resilient against an all right Bayern Munich. Yeah,
very nice. Happy memories, Rafa.
Well, not really, because then Bayern were destroyed by Zenit in the semi-final.
Wow.
So.
There you go.
All right. That's the UEFA Cup / Europa League. Just tip-top entertainment from start to finish. That's coming up on Thursday night. Before that, hello, Gold Show, because Tuesday and Wednesday will be across all the action from match day 5 of UEFA's premier competition. Do join us for that on BT Sport 1. For now, though, that's it for this Tuesday's edition of the Totally Football Show. Thursday, we'll bring another Totally for your pleasure, and then we'll be back to round up all the European news same time next week. For now, it's many, many thanks to Alvaro, to Rafa, to Jules, and to James, and producer Charlie, and you, especially you, listener. Have yourself a great week, and we'll catch you soon.
You've been listening to the Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter, and make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.